Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening, and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Thursday, April 12th, and the season is mercifully over, but seems like a long offseason ahead as well. This is your boy Matt Shook, an AP writer here in Chicago, covering the NBA, Pistons fan and follower my whole life as well, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade. So I got to maintain that level of unbiased reporting, but also weave in my Pistons fandom at the same time, that mind exercise I do here every day on the podcast. But today we're going to be talking about the win that wrapped up the season on Wednesday night against the Chicago Bulls here in Chicago. I was there courtside, and I will also be sharing with you guys most of the pregame chat that we had with the media scrum with Pistons coach Stan Van Gundy before the game, a very interesting one. And if it's his last stand, we're going to let him give up some of his words on tanking. You know, it's Stan Van Gundy. You know what you're getting. You're getting the straightforward answers, as opposed to Fred Hoiberg on the other side, who minutes earlier talked to the media and basically essentially said nothing for 15 minutes. And Fred's probably more the norm these days than guys like Greg Popovich and Stan Van Gundy. And nothing really necessarily wrong with that either, but it was nice and refreshing to hear an NBA coach get up there and say some things. And that's no knock on Fred. He's being Fred, and that's nothing wrong with that. But in his speech and discussion, I guess it's important to keep in mind that tanking and rebuilding are two different things, but I think your opinion on one can strongly influence your opinion on the other, and we'll get into that a little bit later after I share with you the Stan Van Gundy clip. And given that, maybe we should have probably seen something like the Stan Van Gundy trade that he made for Blake Griffin this season as well. But we're also going to be talking about the surprising results from a Twitter poll I put up the other day and what it might mean for the Pistons' future as far as what you think about whether Stan Van Gundy should be coming back or not. But the Pistons topped the Chicago Bulls on Wednesday at the United Center in a 119-87 blowout, the second biggest margin of victory this season, with that 32-point win just behind the 34-point win they had a few days in January 10th, I believe it was, against the Brooklyn Nets on the road. Anthony Tolliver had 13 points in the first 4 minutes and 31 seconds of the game, including 3 threes in that span. And the Bulls, who needed a loss to maintain their draft position in the NBA draft lottery, and Stan Van Gundy will talk about that a little bit later on. But so they just kind of folded from there and let the Pistons have their way with them, despite the fact that the Pistons were very shorthanded as well. The Bulls did get their lead, the lead down to 8 points in the third quarter briefly, but this quickly turned into a 30-point beatdown after that, ending in the 32-point margin, up to 34 at one point at the close of the game as well. Eric Morland, playing in the absence of Andre Drummond, had a career-high 16 points, a career-high 17 rebounds, a career-high 4 blocks, a career-high 4 steals, and a career-high 41 minutes played, if you can catch the pattern there. And he also added 4 assists, which is not a career-high, but also very good, especially for Morland, who, not known for filling up the stat sheet. Luke Kennard, a career-high 23 points for the rookie in his final game as a rookie. Tolliver finished with 18 points in what might be his last game as a Detroit Piston, although there's a lot of you out there listening who certainly don't want that to happen, and I don't either, but the reality of the situation is that might be the reality of the situation. So we'll talk about that more as the offseason rolls on. Henry Ellison was good, 14 points and 10 rebounds in 28 minutes off the bench. The Pistons shot 53% from the field, including at one point in the second quarter they were still shooting about 73%. Just a great shooting performance from against a bad team in Chicago. This is a Pistons team that shot 44% throughout most of the season, so 53% obviously very good. Season ends at 39-43, a half game above the Vegas over-under of 38.5. So if you took the over, congratulations to you. The Pistons finished 4 games out of the Eastern Conference playoffs, which is, that's a lot of games. I mean, they were not really all that close to making it into the playoffs this year, despite kind of some mid-season stumbles by the Miami Heat and Milwaukee Bucks. Although I did see on Reddit tonight that someone had figured out that in 5 of the last 10 seasons, 39-43 would have qualified for the Eastern Conference playoffs. So interesting to think about there. But this is a game where the Pistons, like I said, I was courtside. The Pistons bench, they had a lot of fun with it. They really did. The pregame tunnel before the game, a lot of dancing, a lot of exuberance, which, and Stanley Johnson was kind of the one leading the dancing effort and would said stuff like, as he was chanting, kind of like, we're playing a basketball game today, as if they were trying to, you know, fire themselves up for an otherwise meaningless game, reminding themselves that they're, you know, getting paid a lot of money to to play a game. So good for them to get that going and then to play well and to get the victory. And obviously no incentive to lose like the Bulls did with the fact that the Pistons don't have their first round pick next year. So no draft position to worry about there. As I mentioned, Drummond didn't play. Reggie Bullock, Blake Griffin, all of them didn't play or dress. And they weren't on the bench either, which I thought was strange. They were there, and they were in Chicago. They were in the locker room before after the game, but none of those guys were on the bench. I thought that was weird. Coaching carousel, easy for me to say. The coaching carousel is already turning, as well as Jeff Hornacek was let go by the Knicks late on Thursday night in a Woj bomb from Twitter. So one of the more high-profile jobs in the league is available right now. And speaking of which, will Stan Van Gundy be a part of that coaching carousel? We will find out. Possibly as early as next week, as he's supposed to meet with Tom Gores sometime soon here in the offseason. But in the meantime, I really like how candid Stan Van Gundy is, and I hope you guys too. And there was a great example of that in the pregame media scrum on Wednesday, which I will share with you guys next. But if your company is interested in reaching men 18 to 44, sponsor Locked On Pistons. We are listened to by all sorts of men, 98% of them anyway, of our listeners. And most of them are between the ages of 18 to 44, 80% anyway. So this is your spot if you want to reach that crew. Our rates are reasonable, so email me at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Later on, I'm going to be talking about the surprising results from a Twitter poll that I put up on Locked On Pistons and what it might mean for the Pistons' future. But as I mentioned, I'm going to be sharing this Stan Van Gundy pregame media scrum. I was at the game covering it for the Associated Press on Wednesday. I met Keith Langlois and James Edwards III, Rod Beard and Vince Ellis, the guys that all cover the team day in and day out. I've met a couple of those guys in the past from time to time, but nothing truly substantial or anything like that. But talked with a lot of the other behind-the-scenes dignitaries for the Pistons along the way that I've been seeing through my whole life, too. The way it works is that there's a pregame media scrum around each of the head coaches about an hour and a half before the game, and then the locker rooms are open for 45 minutes for the media to go in there and conduct interviews. Sometimes you get your notes story out of the way if you're a newspaper writer or you're working on a feature for the future or something like that, so you kind of take that time to talk to players and assistants and stuff like that there. In the pregame media scrum, Johnny Kane of Fox Sports Detroit asks a couple of questions for their pregame show interview that they have with Stan Van Gundy, and then the reporters all off-camera get a chance to ask whatever they want to as well. And then, like I said, the locker room opens after that. Then after the game, they get like a 10-minute cool-down period, and then each of the head coaches out in the visiting head coach in Chicago is out in the hallway up against the wall taking interviews just like Stan Van Gundy did. And then Fred Hoiberg's in a little media room there, and then the locker rooms are open for reporters to go talk to players after that. Then the reporters go in and file the stories. It's interesting because something that I've been surprised about is how quickly the players are out of the arena. It's like the bus is leaving like 30 minutes after the game's over. So they quickly kind of get out of there while the reporters are sometimes filing their stories there much later after the players are over. But I wanted to share with you guys the interview. I thought it was an interesting one with Stan Van Gundy. The questioner that's prompted this line of discussion is Sam Smith of Bulls.com. He wrote the Jordan Rules book. He's been covering the Bulls forever, obviously most famously during the Michael Jordan era. He covered him for the Chicago Tribune back then, but like I said, now with Bulls.com, kind of the Keith Langlois of their media coverage team. So here's the interview with Stan Van Gundy. You'll hear a couple other voices in there, Vince Ellis and Cody Westerlund of NBC Sports Chicago, and some others are asking questions as well. But I thought it was an interesting talk from Stan, and the kind of thing that I like to hear as far as a newspaper reporter who's been asking sports athletes and coaches questions and getting non-answers my whole life. So here's Stan Van Gundy on tanking and rebuilding and the like.
Stan, in recent years, most recent, because of Golden State and Cleveland, there was sort of this sense of surety of who's going to be in the finals. And then years before, there was always, Shaq's going to be there because of, Miami or Lakers or the Bulls, whatever. Do you think it's more, from an outside, do you think it's more open this year than it's been in quite a while because of the issues Cleveland and Golden State have had?
Yeah, I'm never as sure on who's going to make it as everybody else. The surest I ever was were the great years here with Jordan. It was pretty tough. But since then, I think Houston can certainly make a run in the West. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think the East, I think Toronto's been the best team, but I think there's other teams there that can make a run. I think anybody in the top four there will have a chance. So I don't know if that makes it more open or what, but I think there's probably five or six teams with a legitimate chance to get to the finals.
Do you think there's been so much talk this season about teams at the end, not your team at the end, but a lot of teams have not maybe given their best personnel toward the end because of the lottery. Do you see a major change coming? Is it time for that now with what happened in these last year or two?
I think so. But the league will have to determine how to go about that. I think it, you know, it used to be like when I came into the league as an assistant, it really wasn't going on, you know, in the mid-90s. And you weren't sitting people out all the time either. I mean, at the end of the year, maybe the last game, you'd give a guy. Really, that's all it was. I mean, you know, guys played every game. You know, I mean, the Bulls won 72. How many games did Jordan play? Played 82, all 6 years. So it wasn't, well, we're five games up, we need a rest. And he seemed to have something left in the playoffs to me, you know, that he didn't need the rest. And now that part to me, even apart from the tanking, has really been interesting because supposedly we've made all these gains in sleep studies and strength coaches and training our athletes, and these are the best athletes we've ever had, and they're not capable of playing 82 games. It doesn't – something does not add up there, that these great, great athletes who we are training so scientifically cannot – play 82 games. But back then, when some teams, Utah at that time when I first came in the league, was still traveling, you know, they were traveling commercial and everything else, they could do it, you know. So that's been one thing, all these guys sitting out. I think the other day we were looking, there's well over 100 guys that have been shut down for the season. Well over 100. So that's some on playoff teams and everything else. But the tanking, you know, even when it started a couple years ago, I mean, Philly did it. It wasn't everybody. We fully have about, you know, 10 teams who've gone out of their way to try to ensure that they have a better chance to lose. I mean, to me, the essence of sports is two teams out there playing against each other trying to win. Now, I said this even in the Philly years, I don't think there's teams, players, or coaches that are out there tanking. It's who they decide to put on the court and how you decide to build your roster and everything else. But when you have a 30-year league that's trying to lose games, I don't think that's
– bad look for the league.
I don't think it's good for our product at all. And it just – to me, it just – it's a lack of integrity in your league, you know, and a lack of respect for our fans. But – that's just me, and I know I go against the norm, you know. I mean, it's – and I think what's happened, too, one of the things is, quite honestly, Philadelphia is good, and everybody's praising the process, how great it was. And the process was based on be as bad as you can be, historically bad, for as long as you can. I mean, you know, they won 75 games the 4 years prior to this, 75 in 4 years, you know. And 28 of those were last year, so they won 47 over a three-year period. Well, clearly you're going to give yourself a chance to accumulate some talent if you try to be as bad as you can. And if that's the process and that's the accepted way to build a team in the NBA, then something needs to change.
Stan, if that gets into the heads of players, if a third of the league is exercising this practice and it's accepted, then whether the players hear it in their own locker room or not, doesn't it? It's just around.
Yeah, I mean, I can't address that, you know, because I've never, thankfully, had to be a part of that. But, you know, I just don't think it's good for our league. But again, I don't know how you overcome it. You know, you have to allow teams the chance, I guess, to go about their business the way they see fit and to build a team the way they see fit. So, but I do think we have to find a way in the league to where there's absolutely zero incentive to lose, where it will not produce you anything to lose. I mean, because I don't know any other, and I don't know exactly the best way to do that. But as long as there's, so they're tinkering with the draft. It's around the margins. As long as there's incentive, some people will choose to go that route. I think we have to remove all incentive to lose, where there's no way to help it. I mean, the draft in all these sports went way back. It was a great idea. We're going to help the worst teams get better. I don't think at that time, I think if you go to anybody in the major sports that was instrumental in bringing the draft into their leagues, it was never in their heads that people would try to lose. That people would try to make a run at the number one pick instead of it winning games. I just don't think it was in anybody's head. It's disappointing to me that that's how people approach sports, professional sports that are supposed to be teams competing to be the best they can, but that's just me.
Do you find it ironic that almost every other walk of life, matter of fact, even if players, that if a player is ever perceived not to be trying, he gets vilified, blasted, called a malinger, every negative thing you can think of in the book. But if an organization decides they want to do it,
yes,
fans are okay with it.
Now, that is ironic. And then you ask the players to give their all and everything else, and you don't do that as an organization? That's tough. And I think players in those situations, it has to be tough, you know, and your expectations of them. To me, it's a difficult situation. And it's getting worse and worse. I mean, this is the worst year I think we've had of it, as many teams, you know, in the race for the bottom.
Are you a supporter of the draft wheel where one team gets number one pick in 30 years?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen Mike Zarin's thing. And look, to me, it has merit. I don't know that it's the best way. It has merit because there's no incentive to lose. As long as there's zero incentive to lose, I think that's a great starting point.
You mentioned, in that discussion briefly about the players. There is, not necessarily epidemic, but a lot of guys just take off now, whereas guys didn't take off. And usually with all the training and the first-class travel, and obviously conditions are better. Why do you think that is, that more players take rest time?
I don't think it's a player's decision in most cases. I think it's
these
teams.
These are not tanking, and these are not losing teams. These are winning teams.
No, winning teams. And I don't know. I think some people think, their science says those guys will be better if they get rest. They're trying to peak for the playoffs and all of that. So I'm not saying it's the wrong move in that case. I'm just saying that to me it's very ironic that in this day and age where we're supposed to have all these great training methods, that these guys are less capable of enduring the grind of an 82-game season than they were in the mid-90s.
And there are not fewer injuries now.
No, there's not. I mean, and the teams that really have embraced resting people don't have fewer injuries either. So I don't know. But that's a whole different issue than the tanking, but to me it's an ironic one that, we've developed all these great training methods, which I guess maybe the science has shown them that our guys aren't capable of playing 82 games, but they were before, but I guess that wasn't good for them. I don't know, but I mean, I don't know. I haven't looked at the number. I usually do at the very end of the year, on how many guys in the league will play 82 this year. LeBron's going to, which I think is remarkable. It's his first time. And it used to be there were a lot of guys that played 82 games. Now it's one of the rarer accomplishments in the league now. We'll have Ish go 82 tonight. It's one of the rarer accomplishments in the league now to go out there 82 games. It's interesting to me.
That's my coach, Stan Van Gundy. Talking about resting and tanking, and it's music to my ears as you've been thinking about this stuff a little bit with teams deciding whether they want to lose on purpose in professional sports with fans in the stands. And again, maybe it was and is the best idea with the way the current system is. You game the system a little bit, you lose on purpose, you get some good players. But, for a team like the Pistons who had a chance to get into the playoffs, they kind of go all in on it and get a superstar. I mean, I can't hate it. It sucks that we're going home as a franchise early on before the playoffs start, but and really not as much upside as a lot of those franchises out there. And maybe there's teams like the Chicago Bulls, for instance, who don't have the players right now to match up with the Detroit Pistons, even when they were throwing all their guys out there. You know, maybe they're building for the future enough to the point where maybe their approach is better than the Pistons right now. But we're going to be talking about, speaking of some results and surprising results, I put up a Twitter poll about Stan Van Gundy, and I wanted to discuss that with you guys and what you guys thought and what it might mean for the Pistons' future as well. But speaking of coaches, a new coach in Detroit, the Locked On Lions podcast with Matt Derry is covering Matt Patricia and the Leos as they get ready for the draft coming up here. So check that one out every day. NBA podcast, NFL podcast, every team in those leagues, and MLB podcasts popping up soon. The Tigers will have one too. So the Locked On Network, we got you covered. Your team every day. Put up a poll on Twitter on, I believe, Tuesday, and it goes up for 24 hours, and it was pretty simple. The question was, what should the Pistons do with Stan Van Gundy? The choices were keep as coach president, keep but just as coach, or fire him from both. And I was a little bit surprised with the reaction and the results of the poll. 126 votes were accumulated from you guys on Twitter. 46% of you said that the Pistons should keep Stan Van Gundy, but just as coach. And only 44% said that they should fire him from both. And then there were 10% of you out there that said they should keep him as coach president. I was among the majority, as it turns out, who voted to keep him, but just as coach. I guess that's not a majority. You got to hit 50% to be a majority. But the most popular answer, I should say. So I was among the 46% that says they should keep him, but just as coach. I was surprised about that at first because I think there's a lot of angst out there about Pistons fans. When talking about Stan Van Gundy and his future, I expected more people to just say, cut ties, fire him completely from everything. But like I said, when you add up the keep as coach president or keep but just as coach, now we're talking about a 56-44 split in terms of keeping him around in some capacity or another with the Pistons. Now, as I noted, I think that this is something where, you know, we're talking about Pistons diehards fans that are listening to this podcast, Pistons diehards that are clicking on those polls, you know, for the most part. A lot of you guys that are listening still after this tough season and things of that nature, when you're looking ahead to no more meaningful basketball for several months for the Pistons, then you guys are really into the day-to-day with this team. And to be that way, you most likely have to be thinking positively about this team. I think that the problem with the Pistons and the problem with what this 9 of 10 seasons without going to the playoffs has brought upon is a lot of apathy for the casual fans. I think if you talk to maybe the average Detroit sports fan, you'd probably get a lot more people that are voting to get rid of Stan Van Gundy. So that's just my kind of reaction to that follow. But we'll be putting up more stuff like that if there's a draft prospect you like out there. But we'll put some more polls up throughout the offseason and also looking for content ideas if you got some. I've got a few and some guests that I'm chasing down, a couple that I scheduled too that I'm pretty excited about. So give us a follow on Twitter as we're always engaged with conversation with you guys on there at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. And Locked On Pistons, the Twitter account there as well. Keep the comments coming. Keep the direct messages coming. Keep the engagement, the likes, and the retweets and all that stuff coming. I love it. It's been a lot of fun for me over this past season to talk to you guys and to meet some of you guys and meet some of you guys digitally and all that good stuff. And I want to keep that going over the summer and into next season as well. And tell your friends about the Locked On Pistons podcast as well. And give us a like on our Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-Matchup. But tomorrow we're going to come back. I know we're not going to have Friday podcast in the offseason, but I will do one more tomorrow as I owe you one from this week. So we got the playoff preview. We're going to be talking about the 8 matchups in the first round and breaking them down and giving my picks for those as well and into the later rounds and the finals and all that good stuff. So we'll be talking about that as well. And I got that Spencer Dinwiddie interview. We'll put that up sometime early next week too. So thanks for joining us, everyone. And we will talk to you all again soon. And thanks for staying with me and with the Locked On Pistons podcast throughout this entire season.